The Free Library of Philadelphia is proud to present a podcast from our author event series, recorded live at the Central Library on the Benjamin Franklin Parkway. To learn more about the Free Library, the Central Library Expansion Project, and how your contribution can help our programs and services for the community, please visit freelibrary.org. We're happy to have him back. It's been a while. Please welcome Eric Jerome Dickey.
How we doing? Ooh, this is a loud mic. That's good. Thanks for coming out. Ah, we got the paparazzi on the front row. Book club? Book club? Delta Girl? Is that sorority or? What's up, Delta in the house? Yeah, Deltas everywhere. Love the alphas, right? Okay, I'm an alpha. I just had to throw that out there. All right. Once again, thanks for coming out. I'm going to read some of my latest novel, Pleasure. As he just said, it's a, well, they're saying it's my first erotic novel, which I guess for me, I guess Genevieve, right, she's going to know, like Genevieve a while back, Between Lovers, and portions of Waking with Enemies were pretty steamy, if you will. You know, I love this, when I'm writing, I love to do a combination of genres. You know, I like Waking with Enemies, Sleeping with Strangers is thriller crime, and I still amalgamate mixed in some erotica in there. And that's just me. It's like all the different type of novels I've read, the different type of stories I've read, and me just kind of like just kicking off and doing my own thing. You know, always trying to, I guess not be a follower, if you will, for what I do, you know. There's a lot of stuff. I remember like starting out, people, I just got an email today. Someone asked, why don't I still do the multiple point of view stories like I used to do early on? Because everybody started doing them. So I started doing, you know, other stuff. Does that make sense, what I'm saying? Yeah. And Pleasure is told from this character, Nia Simone Bigeau's point of view. And the scene I'm going to read is safe. I know we have children in the room, so so don't get scared. It's a safe scene, so they won't be questioning you when we leave here. Mommy, what's you know? An easy setup for it is it's sort of like you ever been in a relationship where you break up with somebody, but they don't break up with you? Okay. Really? Yeah, I can understand. Ooh. Okay. And this is from Nia's point of view. And once again, Nia is a female, even though you hear my voice. Oh, she just finished working out in Stone Mountain. This story takes place in Atlanta. She just finished working out in Stone Mountain, which is sort of important to what's happening here. It's storming. Weather's bad. And I just use it as a setup. My windshield wipers were working overtime as I changed lanes and moved from 285 to Interstate 75. My music was on, once again inspired by the islands, Destra Garcia giving me her soca rhythms. And right now, after working out, my mind was on my hunger, planning to go home and cook Callaloo soup and fresh spinach with crab meat. I sped down the off-ramp, and it hit me that I hadn't checked my P.O. box in a few days. So instead of going right up Cobb Parkway towards Spring Road, my journey was modified. I went left, the other direction on Cobb Parkway, and I went past Barnes & Noble and Cumberland Mall. Then I pulled into the strip mall that housed Circuit City, Toys R Us, L.A. Fitness, and the Smyrna branch of the U.S. Post Office. See, I wanted to check my P.O. box before I went home because I knew that with this weather, once I went in, I wasn't coming back out. Then I wished I hadn't gone to the P.O. box. There was junk mail and a real heavy letter, one that had the size and weight of a subpoena. And for a second, I felt anger, and I wondered, okay, what the heck is going on now? The envelope with the weight of a court order, I looked at it. It was a letter from the man I had left behind. He had been sending text messages, and now this. I stood in a trance, rain falling outside, holding a weighty message from the guy named Logan. Every extremity went numb. I took a breath, and his aroma was on the letter. Now he was invading my senses. I moved my ponytail out of the way, rubbed the back of my neck, then I put the letter down on the counter and rubbed my temples. Felt an intense headache coming on.
The damp floor squeaking underneath my damp running shoes as I paced, squeaking as I shook my head, squeaking as I tried to keep my blood pressure from going up. See, I'd abandoned him on Beale Street, had left Memphis in May and put distance between us, hoping to use that distance and lack of communication to dilute whatever had happened between us. But just seeing his name on the envelope, his address up in Memphis, and then his scent, all of that put me in a state of panic. I mean, in a world filled with text messages, emails, and faxes, he had broken down and sent me a letter. I counted the pages. Six. There were six pages filled top to bottom, each word written on his personalized envelopes and crisp conservative linen in the whitest of whites. And it started with a classic poem. How do I love thee? Let me count the ways. Oh, God. Then his words follow, his struggling to articulate what he felt for me inked on paper. Now, this was only romantic when this was what you wanted, and I did not want this, so this felt the opposite of romantic. I shook my head, aggravation lines growing in my forehead, and I looked over the letter. The L word was written on every page as if the more he wrote down the L word, the more I would feel that way. But see, there was no such thing as love by osmosis. I mean, it was manipulative, criminal, the way he abused the L word. Now, if this was how he felt, it was unsettling because I wanted him to feel the opposite of that way. He knew I didn't want him to feel that way. And my not returning his phone calls, that was a clue. Nauseous feelings rose up inside of me. And I've been over, had to bend over until all of that went away. Then I stared at the rain, frowning, thinking, Logan, let it go. See, I had hoped that his desire for me had been cremated and scattered to the winds, set on fire by my negligence. I mean, I had let go. I didn't want to be brutal. I only wanted to be honest. But when it wasn't what the other person longed to hear, honesty tended to sound brutal. Honesty sounded cruel. Honesty could sound evil. But see, my only other option, the only other thing I could do was lie. But a lie would not open the doors to my freedom. A lie would enslave me to what I was trying to escape. A lie did not benefit me in any positive way. See, sometimes trying to be honest without being brutal was like trying to swim and not get wet. Thunder boomed as I ran through the downpour and I raced back to my car. And as soon as I closed the car door, I picked up my cellular and I called Logan. Now, chalk that up to irresistible impulse driven by a mixture of angst and rage. And would you believe it? Logan answered on the first ring. Is this my Trinity girl finally calling me back? See, I swallowed. See, he knew I had been born at Port of Spain. He knew that my father had been killed before I was born. And he knew that a year later, my mother had ended up meeting and marrying a hard-working man from Los Angeles. Then my Trinidad days were over and my West Coast life had begun. But see, not that many people knew that. Not that many people knew that much about me. And I liked it that way. I said, Logan. He said, Nia, I miss you. His desperate and sincere tone, well, that slowed me down. Actually, it halted me, made me in that moment feel massive guilt. He said, I've been worried about you. I've been worried sick about you, Nia. I said, Logan, the letter you sent, I just got it. Well, what do you think? See, then guilt gave way to anger. Anger that made my peaceful spirit want to turn evil. But that was my frustration. And he's asking about the letter. And I looked at the letter. So many errors were in his letter. See, it killed me how educated people still didn't get that your, Y-O-U-R, was a possessive. And your, Y-O-U, apostrophe R-E, meant you are. And the phrase wasn't could care less. It was couldn't care less. Could care less meant you still cared. And right now, I couldn't care less about Logan. And I want to tell him that learn the difference between there, T-H-E-I-R, and there, T-H-E-R-E. And there was no such word as irregardless. But instead of saying it, I just took a breath and said, Logan, we should talk. We really need to clear the air between us. He said, good, because I'm in Atlanta. I said, what? He said, I'm in the ATL. I said, what are you doing in Atlanta? I drove down in the rain. You drove 400 miles in the rain? Why would you do that? Nia, I need to see you. This has to be handled face to face. I closed my eyes and I rubbed my neck. I said, Logan, Are you really in Atlanta? He says, raining hard, skies are black, lots of thunder and lightning. When did you get here? Not too long ago. What are you doing here? Yeah, I was waiting to hear from you. I left a few messages and I said I was coming down. Well, Logan, look, we hadn't agreed. Even if you left a message, we hadn't talked about you coming down here. There's more to an agreement than you leaving a message than you doing what you want to do. Well, Neil, why haven't you answered my calls? Pressure mounted and I rubbed my temples. The answer to that question just seemed so obvious. See, what I felt in this moment was the opposite of pleasure. I had left him. I had sensed there was going to be an emotional earthquake. Knew in advance I had left without warning. Now that earthquake had come to Atlanta. He asked, well, can I come over? I said, no. He said, Neil, look, I came down from Memphis. I've been driving for the last 7 hours on bad road. Will you at least meet me? Where are you, Logan? He said, Midtown. I said, you're in Midtown. Where in Midtown? Atlantic Station. Okay, Logan. Okay, look. Take 75 up to Howell Mill Road. That's about halfway. You see, this was my area. I did not want him near my home. I didn't want him to try to pull that I need a place to crash tonight routine. See, right now he had my mind all messed up. I had my thoughts all over the place. He said, okay, Howell Mill Road, then what? I paused, and again, I thought about it. I said, you know where Walmart is? He said, look, I can find Howell Mill Road with my GPS, but where is Walmart? He said, look, when you get off, go left. You're going to see a brand new plaza on the left. Verizon, Starbucks, Ross. Walmart is down on the lower level, underground. So just meet me down there. He said, when? I said, now. Then I hung up the phone. My heart beat like I had just finished a grueling run. I mean, he was here, and I was afraid. See, I had left his number programmed in my cellular, so whenever he called, DNA Logan popped up on my screen. DNA, do not answer Logan. I hadn't responded to his phone calls, text messages, faxes, hadn't responded to any form of communication for almost a season. Because when I was done, cold turkey if I had to. Now, up until the messages he had sent this morning, I had never expected to hear from him again. At least not this soon, and not like this. In my mind, he had finally cut bait and moved on, but that was maybe because I had moved on so long ago. I cursed. Now, here I go with this madness. I didn't want to deal with this insanity. I thought this part of my life was over. Thought I was free. But I was wrong, and I had to go get my freedom. Okay, I got to figure out where I'm supposed to pick up at. As I drove through the storm, I practiced what I was going to say, became a preacher preparing her sermon. But I trembled as if I was a runaway child caught in prison, going before the parole board. You see, my vocabulary was sufficient, my education superlative, but I still stuck for words that would make him understand that this was over, that if we continue this relationship, this would become a caricature of a real relationship. And in the end, he would hate me as I hate him. See, I wasn't a woman to him. I was something else to conquer. And once he'd conquered, I'd become ordinary in his eyes. See, I tried to understand me and why I did the things I did. I'd rushed into too many relationships, had promised loyalty because loyalty was expected, knowing that loyalty was not what I was capable of, not forever. Not since my college days in Hampton. As far as I was concerned, man was the most disloyal creature on the planet. I made it through the storm and went to the underground parking lot. Logan's Range Rover pulled right up behind me, parked right next to me on my driver's side. By then, my heartbeat was in my throat. He was on his cellular. He motioned at his phone, then he smiled at me. Veins rising in my neck, I smiled too, only my smile was a frown turned upside down. Again, I took a deep breath. Then Logan got off his Range Rover, hanging up his cellular as he came toward me. Now, Logan, he was a good-looking man. The women in the tri-state area, they looked at him and lost control. Women who were financially strained, women who needed supplemental income to make ends meet, they did their best to get next to him. But see, he never had that power over me. I wasn't one of the women in the world who was desperate to be taken care of. I only needed pleasure. And in the end, Logan could not please me the way I desired to be pleased. He came too close and touched my arm right above the elbow, and I felt the opposite of happy. I'm changing words because we got kids. He touched me on my arm and I yanked away. His smile lessened as his eyes widened, and I shook my head. So he thought that simple touch would reawaken some desire inside of me, some desire that had never really taken root. He didn't understand me. When I was no longer attracted to a man, when he was no longer fulfilling me, I just couldn't imagine him in a sexual way. He saw that in my eyes. He took a deep breath, nodded, his lips tight, and said, "What did I do wrong?" I said, "Logan, why are you here?" He said, "Look, Nia, are you seeing somebody else?" "Logan, that's not the issue." "Where are you?" "Logan, I'm not answering that." He said, "Look, I drove down in the storm to see you. I didn't ask you to, Logan." "Nia, I'm here." "What do you want, Logan?" "Nia, I'm just asking, what did I do wrong?" I took a hard breath. "Nothing, Logan. You didn't do anything wrong." He said, "I love you." I said, "Well, maybe that's the problem. I don't love you, Logan." "Well, maybe not now, Nia, but do you think that maybe if we gave it some more time, do you think you could?" I said, "Logan, waiting for me to love you, that would be like waiting on Santa Claus." It looked like he was about to fall apart. And I said, "Okay, Logan, are we done?" He rubbed his neck for a moment, then he cleared his throat and said, "I left some stuff at your place when you living back up in Memphis." I said, "I know, it's down here with me. It's at my townhouse." He said, "Well, can I come get my things?" I said, "Well, we'll arrange something." He said, "Well, I'm here. Can I come now?" No, not now. I have your address." "So, Nia, I'm here in Atlanta, and I can't come by to pick it up?" "No." "Were you shacking up or something?" "Look, Logan, I can FedEx it all to you first thing in the morning." "FedEx. Logan, come on. Let's not make this any more painful than it needs to be, okay? Don't drag it out." "Oh, no need to drag this out, Nia." "Okay. Is that right?" "No more than it's already been dragged out." He nodded. The things he had left at my place in Memphis, I had already put that in a ragged box. His name was written on that box in bold letters, Logan. I had already unmarked my territory, and I had dragged that box with me when I moved, kept it in the garage, left it with the things he had left behind, left it with all the things that I didn't want. With a sigh preceding my words, I said simply, "Logan, maybe you can understand it if I say this. We're not equally yoked." "Equally yoked? We're not, Logan, you don't do it for me." "Nia, you're tripping." I said, "Logan, I have submitted to my desires and I've had new experiences while I was with you." "Submitted to your desires? Whoa, what does that mean?" "To you, it means that I was unfaithful to you." "You're telling me you cheated?" "Logan, I'm telling you that I followed my desires and I let them lead me toward my new experiences." "How many times?" "Twice." "Twice? With the same guy?" "No." "With two men?" "Yes." "With two men?" "Yes." "In my city?" "Logan, you don't own Memphis. I was born there. And I was a taxpaying citizen at the time." "Who? Who, Nia? None of your business." He shook his head, sucked his lips, and spoke with the calmness and said, "You were with two men in my city while you were my woman." Then Logan made a hard step toward me. Then he looked around. People were staring. Then Logan, he backed away and went to his Range Rover, head down, his steps slow, heavy, shaking his head as he got inside. His engine started, and I took a deep breath. His reverse lights came on, and he backed out, headed toward the ramp. He left without looking back. He sped away, his Range Rover slashing through rain, his tires splashing falling water. And I sat in my car, shaking, letting Logan go wherever he was going. My head ached, and my nerves were so bad that I couldn't drive. Tears formed in my eyes. My lips trembled. I clenched my teeth, and I screamed. Okay, I'll stop right there. Thanks. That is just some of the Nia Logan breakup scenes. So Logan has a big part in the story. But see, I didn't read any of the sexy stuff. Is that good? Aren't y'all proud of me? uh, I don't generally say a lot. I usually just open the floor for if you guys have any questions, Q&A. And I'm not sure who has the mic. We have somebody over here with the mic on the side. Hi. So if you have any questions, just raise your hand, and she'll bring the mic over to you. Oh, it's two of you. It's two? Who's the second? Okay, over here, another side, over here. Oh, we have someone down front right here. Right here. A brave soul up front.
Go first.
Okay, and then, yeah. Okay, hi. Is it on?
Hello?
Uh-huh. Hey.
Hi.
I wish you could see her smile. She's been smiling the whole time. This is, like, wonderful, man. Thank you.
What made you want to be a writer?
What made me want to be a writer? I think just growing up, you just realize that you're just kind of different, you know what I mean? In a sense, like, you know, storytelling. I've enjoyed different types of stories, comics. I wanted to do comics when I was a kid. I mean, just not for work, just for fun. I mean, so I've always done stuff. And really what's happened is all these wonderful hobbies that I had over the years kind of ended up here with me writing novels. I mean, that's from, you know, working on comics to acting to doing stand-up comedy to screenwriting to trying to write episodes for local cable television. All of it is storytelling to me. All of it is connected. People often ask, I can't separate any one part of it because all of it, I use all of it in what I do. The classes at UCLA, going back, taking fiction writing classes, being in theatrical productions where you're creating characters, you're creating story, where you're moving characters around the stage, discussion, motivation, and all that. All this stuff comes into play for me when I'm working, when I'm doing this, yeah. So, I mean, it's just something I just really enjoy doing, still do enjoy being creative. I mean, I enjoy the creative process more than anything else, that looking at, I guess, old school would be looking at the blank page. Now, in the computer generation, it's looking at the blank screen, you know, and just creating something word by word, you know, scene by scene. This character here, you know, Logan, this time last year, they didn't exist. Nia didn't exist, you know, not like this, you know, not in this full novel form. I mean, I was still trying to figure out who the character was, what the story was going to be like, what the story was going to be about. She was from Trinidad. I didn't know if the generation from her was from Trinidad, meaning that she was born in the States, but maybe her mother wasn't or her father wasn't. But I actually had her actually born on that soil, but she's been here all of her life. So for the most part, she's American and from L.A., you know. And one thing that this job has given me is that, you know, book tour, I get to travel a lot. So I use everything I come in contact with, be it London, be it the islands. Whenever I go on book tour and I come back, I always have so many newspapers, so many clippings, so many brochures. Like this year, I did 21 cities in 19 days. So, yeah, you know, I would not recommend that to anybody. 21 cities in 19 days. I mean, and here was one. Here was one of them. One of them was Dallas to Bakersfield, California, back to North Carolina in a day or so, somewhere there about. Yeah. So, I mean, I was literally in Bakersfield. I had a hotel room for 2 hours. Did an event, got on a red eye, came back, got off a plane, went straight to an event. But I use all of that. I use all of that stuff. I mean, what I just described is just basically like this life of the writer. But what I do, I would take that and I would give that, always in the airport, always this, and I would give it to his character, sleeping with strangers, waking with enemies, Gideon, who's very disconnected, living out of bag, always at the airport, always in hotels. And it's probably why a lot of the books that I write have hotel scenes. Because one thing I would do is I would actually sit in the hotel room. I would sit there and I would say, some sort of a scene is going to take place here. Just using where I am, you know. 21 cities, 19 days. I wrote, I had something happen in every city as I was writing. I write while I'm on the road. So even if it was just a paragraph or if it was a couple of pages, I may not use it. But I do it. But I write it up, you know. Which is funny because I was writing another novel, and I had And this is, for the most, it's like really fun. I mean, you know, whatever. And I needed a scene. So I started looking through all this old stuff I had. I had all this, this stuff from London, which was like 2 pages of just me walking around, you know, when I'm passing by. And I took it and put what I needed in it. I made it a chase scene. So, right. So I mean, that's part of what I do. I use everything, man. You know, yes, ma'am. Oh, she's got the mic. Hello.
Hi, how you doing? My name is Sylvia. I'm originally from New Jersey.
Hey, Jersey.
Hi, how you doing? Again. and I've read a few of your novels. The last one I read, you had actually used a Caucasian character, Lisa, who was married to a white man. And I noticed that most of your novels typically have...
Oh, okay. Lisa was not Caucasian.
No, her husband.
Right,
she was
okay.
married to
right,
a gotcha. Wolf. She was married
right.
to Wolf.
Right.
And I read that book. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I wanted to know, how do you determine the names for your characters? I thought that Logan was a pretty interesting name for a character, and Nia, that you juxtapose those two together, and then Wolf and Lisa.
Yeah.
And I wanted to know, how do you determine the names of your characters? I hope to eventually write a novel as well. And what made you interject the... white husband in that particular novel, where you typically have a more of an Afrocentric kind of community in your novels?
Okay, first question. So you just asked about 5 questions. I need to take notes. for me, when I do names, I just do simple names. Wolf, Driver, Dante. For me, I use names that when people are reading a book and they look down, they can pronounce the name, which is, it sounds really stupid, but it's just that simple, because I just know for me, just in my reading experience, people have done these complicated names and I can't pronounce it. So for whatever reason, you start to skip it. And I think, and by skipping it, you don't connect with the character, you know, because basically it's like this: you're reading, then you get to this word you can't pronounce shit. All right, you know what I mean? So it messes up the rhythm. I forgot the other questions, man. People, like the Afrocentric characters. I've always done a lot of different type of characters. You know, it's just really interesting how nothing I write so far as the dynamics of people and race is new. But I wrote Milk in My Coffee, and for a moment people thought I invented interracial dating. And you know, and it's nothing new. I mean, I remember I was looking at a movie, Pinky, which came out in 1939. You know, the same issues way back then. I mean, in the same, and it was interesting, you know, you do a book in the 90s, 60 years later, and it's still, for the most part, the same type of reaction to, you know, to whatever. I don't want to do the same type of characters over and over again, you know. So Lisa married to Wolf. She's married to Wolf, you know. And he's more of a character for me when I'm writing. He happens to be white, because I'm not writing about a character who's, I'm not jumping into his culture and everything else like that. He's a, you know, he was, to me, he was a good character. You know, he's a real, you know, you know, it's funny, because when I did, say, like Milk in My Coffee, which, if I can get to this point, if I can articulate it, because you kind of caught me off guard with that, I did Milk in My Coffee. People talked about, you know, the interracial thing, blah, 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 you know, because it's up front. It's the characters up front. When I did Sister, Sister, which was the first book that came out in 1996, no one said anything about three of the 4 characters were biracial. And their mom and pop were in the story, but they were in the background, which, for the most part in America, they like to see it in the background. You know what I'm saying? So, but when it's up front, it becomes an issue. It becomes, why did you? And it's like, what you're just writing, you learn a lot about people. Is the choices you make, and you write the way people respond to stuff, what they think should be in a book, what they think that you, as an African American male who's living in the United States, should write about, which really has nothing to do with you as an individual, as a writer, and what you want to do. Because when I sit down in front of a computer, and I'm going to spend this 6, 7, 8, 9 months, it's not about anybody else. It's about me and the story that I want to tell. I don't imagine that there are 10,000 people looking over my shoulder. I don't imagine my mom is in the room. I just don't. It's just, for me, it's being honest with the characters that I'm writing about. And the biggest challenge for me, I could keep myself in a box. I could write about all the characters to be like Tyrell and Shelby and live in L.A. off of Crenshaw. Or I can expand and I have characters, say, like Wolf, who is different. Nia, who is from Trinidad. Characters, Sigma Strange, Awakening with Enemies, a lot of that takes place in London and the U.K. And for me, the traveling, a lot of personal growth, which I share through the novels, you know. Whether or not the reader accepts that, that is up to the reader. You know, just as I said once again, people are so used to, probably the comments I really don't even know how to respond to are the ones that I interpreted like this. And this is not your comment. Why didn't you write about me? You know, it's a whole, when I feel, why don't you write about somebody who looked like me from where I am, who has my issues and my whatever. And I think my characters are pretty universal. I mean, if you take away the Wolf's color, you know, he's just another guy in love with a wife who is in love with somebody else, which is basically the classic setup for the Norris type films, which is what, you know, Drive Me Crazy was, you know. Genevieve, Genevieve. that was an interesting cast of characters. Interesting cast of characters, because once you got back to Odenville, for the people who don't know, Genevieve is a book I did that came out probably about 4 years ago, and it takes place in. And that's what I do, because I do Odenville, Alabama, which is small, very very small town, and also I'll do London, and at the same, but I'll do just as much research for each. You know, I mean, for me, I flew back to Atlanta, drove to Odenville, and I'm riding around the town creating a character. You know, creating a character. Actually finding where this character lives. I mean, I'm in that library, reading the history of that town. You know, for me to get two pages right. So when you're reading it, it's accurate. Because when I'm writing a book about Odenville, it's all about if the people from Odenville pick it up, this rings true. You know, even though you don't know Odenville, at the same time, as a writer, I have to paint this picture of Odenville from the character's perspective, what they see, how they feel about it, you know. Same thing for London. You know, I have to give you guys London at the same time. I remember when I did I Was Sleeping with Strangers, Waking with Enemies, two books that took place in the U.K., I remember just getting nervous that, you know, when the book comes out, did I mess up London? You know, did I mess it up? You know, because if you mess up anything, it's like someone writing a story that takes place here in this area, and they have a car driving the wrong way up 17th. You go, traffic does not go that way. That's the kind of stuff that you just don't want to do. For me, you don't. You know what I mean? Who's got the mic? Sorry about that. I have a tendency to ramble. Go ahead.
Two questions.
Yes, ma'am.
The first one is, do you agree with when you take classes and mm-hmm. they always tell you you must write every day? That's my first question.
I don't think you should do anything every day. So okay. I love writing, but some days it's like I really need to do something else, if that makes sense to you. I love what I do, but I don't even want to have sex every day. I want to have access to it every day. But I might not want to do it every day, you know.
And my second question, I'm about 3/4 the way finished my book, and I have like the meat of the book, and then I write like bits and pieces here and there. Do you suggest finishing the book and then add the bits and pieces? Because sometimes I just want to stop and put the bits and pieces into the book.
What are the bits and pieces that you want to put in? Are they part of the story? Or
yes, they're part of the story.
Well, put it in. I would say put it in, you know, mm-hmm. because it's like a story for me is this. It's this logical progression. You know what I mean? So you open a story and everything has to make sense, no matter how preposterous it can become in a story. Even in comedy, the setup, and it can become over the top, but it makes sense because, you know, the logical progression, the setup was there, you know. If these are missing pieces, yeah, put them in, because you need to read it and work it with that stuff in there. You know, because what you put in changes everything that comes after.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know what? It's like, that's great in theory, you know, to be able to just write through and go back. But the thing is this, if I'm writing and if I'm at a point where something isn't working, I have to go back and fix stuff. You understand what I'm saying? You can't get to the end and have all this stuff that just doesn't make sense and then try to fix it all up. You know, it's like assembling a car. You got to put all the pieces together. You can't decide, well, I'm going to throw the motor over here and throw some tires down to the side, and I'll get to the rest of it later. You know what I mean? You got to, because you're building, to me, that's how it works for me, you know. I go back, I do a lot of rewriting as I write. And for the people who write, you know, the biggest part of the job is rewriting. You know, I beat a chapter to death. Even maybe the stuff I just read only took a few minutes, but I would work on it for days, for weeks, trying to get every little bitty thing in there, you know, just so it can make sense. You know, the logical progression from Nia getting from, working out, setting up that, you know, this thing with Logan, and then actually face to face. So all of this makes sense. It doesn't become one of those, okay, why is she treating him like that? You understand what I'm saying? It's been set up, so now we understand before she shows up, you know, the tension is there. What the scene is about is there. You know what I mean? You know that someone doesn't want to be in this relationship and someone does. So as I'm reading it, you know, because I can actually hear people in the front row when Logan was asking, can he come over? They were going like, no. No. Yeah. Okay, next question. Yes, ma'am. Who's got the... Yes, ma'am.
Hi. My name's Denise Irby, and I'm an unpublished author.
Okay.
I want to know, what advice do you have for new authors trying to get their books published? Do you recommend self-publishing, or do you recommend going through the publishing community?
Well, see, I went through the publishing community, but see, self-publishing, if you have... what it takes, and I just mean because you have to, you are the publishing company when you self-publish. I mean, so you have to make sure your books, the package is put together because you're selling a product. Everything from the, down to the font in the book, to the editing, the layout. I've picked up some, you know, and they didn't, the book was self-published, but they didn't do the basics. You know, like they had like 4 spaces between each sentence. You know, there was no indentation. You know, a lot of the basic stuff, because you're presenting a package that when people pick it up, it has to look professional. You know what I mean? Because it can be a wonderful book, but people look it up and they go like, this looked like a third grade work. And they will, you know, put it down, you know. The cover, you're everyone. You're everything when you do self-publishing. There's actually a book, I believe it's called A Guide to Self-Publishing, which can explain it in detail. Going to a publisher, always my recommendation if you can. There's also a book called Guide to Literary Agents. If you're at that spot, find some agents, send your stuff out to, and you know, and take it from there, because the agent is going to put it in the hands of the editor, or the editor who's looking for the type of work that you're doing. You know, so you're not just, because I sent stuff out for, it took me 4 years. So this is back in early 90s, from starting to send stuff out, rejections. Well, not finding a home for my stuff. I kind of backed away from using the word rejection, because really you're trying to find a home for your work. You know what I mean? And sometimes it's easy thing to do, and sometimes it isn't. And at the same time, because even if you self-publish and you're out selling your work, you still have to work on your next book. Right. So, I mean, so it's never ending. I mean, you're the one who send the books out. You're the one who, I remember, and I've had these conversations with people who were self-published, trying to collect your money from places you send your book to, from book clubs that they sent books to. You know, here's a story. So, this writer, a good friend of mine, she had sent, say, like 50 books to this book club. So she sent them to you, care of the book club. So she didn't get her money. So she contacted you to get the money. And you said, well, you know, they got the books. So basically, she never got her money. So this is the type of stuff that you can possibly go through, you know. So you have to be prepared for that, you know what I mean? So you're FedEx, you are everybody. you know, everybody when you do it. You know, so you're going to spend a lot of your energy trying to get your product out. When you go on the road, you got to take yourself with you. What doesn't sell, you have to bring back. You know what I mean? So it's a, you know, if you're prepared for all of that, yeah. You know, me, I'm the kid growing up that could never sell anything. So I knew that I'm good at working, but I am not. Remember like we had those candy drives and stuff at school? I probably sell like 2 candy bars, you know what I mean? One to my grandmama, you know, and the other one because I ate it, you know, but that was about it. You know, so I just don't have that salesman thing, you know what I mean? Which, and I've seen Michael Bazin is excellent at it. You know, being around here for years, he's excellent at it. Michael Bazin can sell anything. You know, he's good. I mean, he's good books, but I'm saying, you know, he has that personality to get up to, you know, to do that, you know. Because starting out, you're going to be the person, the unknown, that you're trying to get to sell one book to, hoping that someone reads it, likes it, and tells someone else to buy the book. And I do mean buy the book and not borrow the book, because you're in a business. Because the book borrowing thing, that don't keep your lights on. because people will do this. They will come up and say, I mean, to me, they'll say, I bought your book, and 20 people in my office read it. You know? One book, isn't that like bootlegging? Okay, well, we'll do one more question. One more. The guy right here.
Yeah, how you doing?
How you doing, man?
My name's Osborne, and I basically have read all your books, and I would like to know what character you feel most personifies you in your, you know, in your books. And not only that, when are we going to bring, you know, your version of the Philadelphia, you know, area type of thing going on? Because it's always like the ATL, Memphis, California. But you jumped over and went over London. You went across seas, okay? You know, you went over there, you know.
So, you know, because they had me over for book tour in London. And so a lot of times what I started doing, because I would go places to work, and then just pop right back. So what I started doing, I just started extending. I would either go a week early, so I would get a week not working, so I could be just to walk around, tourist, and gradually got to know the place. You know, it's like, say, even here, if I'm back here long enough, because I don't want to just, you know, like I say, you know, you got to do that thing. Well, somebody got to put a brother up. I mean, because, you know. Them trips are costing money, man. I said, you? Okay. Me and the Delta. Okay. And so at some point, because like I said, I try to include as much as I can in all the places I go as I'm working, if it's appropriate, if it fits in. Because a lot of stuff has been put in and has been cut out. which character personifies me? Gideon upside down. That's it. Okay. Had to go. Okay, on that note, I want to thank all of you for coming. Give yourself some love. We're going to get to the part where we can sign some books upstairs. Okay, we're going to sign books upstairs. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to a podcast from the Free Library's Author Event Series. If you live in Philadelphia or are planning a visit and would like to attend an author event, information is available at freelibrary.org.